You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
As promised, caller 10 right now at 800-636-1067. You're winning two tickets to see John Fogerty, the Celebration Tour, Sunday, June 9th. Jiffy Lube Live. Tickets are on sale now. For tickets and more event information, visit thefandc.com/events. This is courtesy of Live Nation. Welcome back, G&D Sans Danny today. Kick off your future with the law firm of Kondori and Murat. They're the official Grant and Danny Show sponsor. They'll help protect your assets, update your will and trust. Schedule a free estate planning strategy with one of their Fairfax-based attorneys. Visit kmlawyers.com and mention the show to get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. We've got the Nats and the Commanders coming up in the Blitz. We start on the ice with the Caps playing a massive game tonight. Ben Raby covering the proceedings for the Capitals Radio Network. Benjamin, back-to-back, 2-1 wins out west, and all of a sudden, the boys are battling. They are a point out of the playoffs. A win tonight, they come home in the postseason seeding for the first time in weeks.
Yeah, they haven't been in a postseason spot, Grant, since January 2nd. So it's been a minute, as the young ones would say. And that opportunity coming up tonight, thanks in part to a nice turnaround on this season-long five-game Western road trip. They had a couple of lopsided defeats last week in Winnipeg and Edmonton, and followed it up with, as you noted, the back-to-back 2-1 wins in Seattle and Vancouver. I like the way they won those games, Grant. It's been kind of in their DNA this year. They have found a way, as good teams do, to win some low-scoring, grinded-out affairs on nights where maybe the offense isn't readily available. Now they could lean on Charlie Lindgren in this case to an extent, and just the collective in front of Lindgren. They could win these sometimes uncomfortable games where you're just hanging on late in third periods. I think it speaks to the maturity of some of these young players they have sprinkled in the lineup. I think it speaks to Spencer Carberry trying to sell his team on the importance of playing the game a proper way. I think it speaks very highly of a number of characteristics of the team that they've been able to win games, again, in this manner, which as we get deeper into the season here, you know, things do tend to tighten up. They've shown an ability to win those types of games. I think it bodes well.
They've been playing upwards of nine guys 26 or younger during the stretch here post-deadline. LaPierre, McMichael, Ivan Mereshnichenko among them looking really talented, and like they might have some major upside. What have you made of the kids?
Well, Mereshnichenko's been a nice, pleasant surprise here. Not that we doubted him, Grant. The first-round pick going back to 2022 comes with pedigree, you know, was highly touted prospect, et cetera. But the fact that he's being thrown in here, and let's acknowledge, too, the trade of Anthony Mantha, a 20-goal scorer, essentially opened the spot in the lineup, in the depth chart, and Mereshnichenko had the first crack at it, and he hasn't let up, and the kid is good. He's a fun watch. He has a couple of goals, but also just the eye test. He engages physically. He goes to the quote-unquote high-danger areas, and for a guy who's being thrust into some pretty important games here, he doesn't seem overwhelmed by the moment, by the stage, etc. There's been no real, you know, rookie issues, if you will. So he's been a pleasant surprise. And as far as McMichael and LaPierre, I think the expectation is growing that the two of them continue, you know, to be guys that the team could lean on. You know, obviously a little bit more experience than Mereshnichenko, but Miro, number 63 for folks watching tonight in Calgary. He's a fun watch. He's been very, very impressive here.
Oh, he's been a blast. The assist to Wilson was pretty sick. How about their offense ticking up? They're top 10 in goals per game since the All-Star break. They're fourth on the power play since that time. And I understand that really this is about the defense and them being buttoned up here for about 5 weeks, but they're certainly getting more on that end of the ice as well.
Yeah, they are, and I'm glad you brought up the power play there. The power play is a big reason for that, and coincidentally, in these back-to-back 2-1 wins, they haven't had a lot of power play opportunities, but they've been able to lean on the power play certainly a lot more than they were earlier in the season. I think that has to do a lot with the fact that the power play for so many years in these parts, that it was, you know, a well-oiled machine that pretty much ran on autopilot. And for the guys who have been here for that stretch, you know, for the Ovechkins, Carlsons, Oshies, et cetera, there was a lot of muscle memory. They made changes this year to the power play. It was one thing Spencer Carberry and assistant coach Kirk Muller, you know, wanted to do. It was on the priority list to tweak the power play. And I would say, it's, you know, and the players have acknowledged this, it really took a few months. It probably took until after the All-Star break, after the bye week, for it to really click, and it's been something that they've been able to lean on and rely on, you know, certainly a lot more than the first half of the season. It's been among the reasons for the uptick in the overall offensive productivity.
Ben, about 30 seconds here, but can you preview Calgary for us? I mean, to me, just looking at the, you know, the bones of their resume, they're basically the Capitals of the West at this point.
Yeah, a little. You're right. On the outside of a playoff position, trying to keep their season alive, they have more ground to make up. They were big-time sellers at the trade deadline. They won two in a row. They beat Vegas and Montreal over the past week. They got to be feeling good about themselves, but they're a little bit of a thinner lineup than I would say the Capitals are, just based on they were really, really heavy sellers leading up to the deadline.
Cannot wait. We will listen to the game tonight just after 8 o'clock for pregame here on The Fan. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Grant.
Be good. And by the way, between Grant and Danny and the Caps, a special Nats preview of the 2024 season with Toby Altizer tonight and Savannah McCann. So make sure you're listening right here on The Fan when I am done at 6:30. All right, let's keep it moving. Speaking of the Nats, our guy Bobby Blanco, MassinSports.com. Bobby, Josiah Gray gets the nod on opening day over Patrick Corbin. Your reaction?
I think that's the right move. I think that the Nationals have been kind of teeing this up all spring training. If you kind of map out the days that Josiah has been starting or throwing, it lined up that he would take the ball in about 10 days in Cincinnati for opening day. And, you know, this is the guy that was their lone all-star last year. He had a very impressive year in his first full season as like a major leaguer, front of the line starter for this team. I know he kind of had some ups and downs, I think, in August a bit, but then finished the season strong. Came into camp looking really good, and David Martinez and company have had nothing but great things to say about Josiah in camp, how he's performed. I know if you look at his spring stats, they're not fantastic, but he does have like one flare-up that kind of makes them not look great. But other than that, he's been solid all spring training, and this is the passing of the guard, right? Like Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, Patrick Corbin have been your opening day starters since 2012, and now it's Josiah Gray. So it's time for this new young rotation to step up and kind of lead the Nationals into this new era.
Nats whittling their roster down like every other club is right now. Yesterday, right-hander Jackson Rutledge, former first-round pick, sent to AAA. Darren Baker, Lewin Diaz, Robert Gesellman, Brady Lindsley, and Louis Perdomo sent to minor league camp. Any surprises at all there or with any of their roster decisions so far?
Not quite any surprises. I was maybe a little surprised about Jackson. I thought he had pitched well and could possibly compete for that fifth spot, but I think that's going to likely go now to Zach Davies, Trevor Williams, and it's not really surprising they sent him down. I just thought maybe he would have another start or so up in spring training, but I know he started the spring breakout game on Friday, so that probably was the first sign that they were getting ready to send him down. But I think Jackson will be up at some point early in the first month or so of the season whenever they need that sixth starter spot. If it's not going to be Trevor Williams as a long man out of the pen, assuming Zach Davies is your fifth starter, then I think we'll see Jackson Rutledge back up with the team. But yeah, the top prospects are still in the camp. Wood, Cruz, I know Hassel has been hurt, but House and Lipscomb are there too. Lipscomb's back in the starting lineup today. Something to keep an eye on as we count down the days of camp.
You say something to keep an eye on. Are you starting to get a little tingle? What do you mean by that?
I am a little bit, only because he's the one that's consistently still starting. And you would think that if we, coming into spring training, it was all about Cruz and Wood probably had the best chance of any of them to make the opening day roster. I know Wood had that little wrist injury again on Friday in the spring breakout game. We saw him play in the game yesterday, so he's back and seems fine. But Trey Lipsicum has consistently been the one that's starting. I think he has been playing some of the most games out of any of those guys. I think Wood leads them all in total games appearances, but I wouldn't be surprised to see if Trey Lipsicum leads them in starts and all over the infield, third base, shortstop, second base. So I think it's something to keep an eye on because he's continually in the starting lineup when Nick Senzel, Luis Garcia, obviously C.J. Abrams is going to be your starting shortstop. But those two guys were figured to be in the opening day roster and starting. But Trey Lipsicum is hanging around starting still in spring training games.
So is it, logic-wise, are you saying, like, if he were to make it, would it be he's a platoon guy all over? Or maybe would supplant, and we're not saying this is likely, but in the unlikely situation that he stuns everyone and makes the roster, maybe as the second baseman over Garcia or third baseman over Senzel? What are you thinking?
Right. Just to be clear, I think this is unlikely that he makes the Major League roster. I think, like, Nassim Nunez has an upper hand because he's a Rule 5 guy. But in the event that Trey Lipsicum does make the open day roster, Mike Rizzo has always said, you know, they don't bring these guys up unless they intend to play. If he makes the open day roster, my guess is his intention is to play Trey Lipsicum, and that would be probably as your starting second baseman over Luis Garcia, who has actually hit well in spring. It's the mental mistakes in the field and on the base pass that are hurting him, but he's been hitting well at the plate. I would think if Lipsicum makes the team, they don't bring these guys up to ride the bench. He would play either as your starting second baseman or maybe a platoon guy in terms of playing third base when Nick Senzel needed a day off or something.
Bobby, good catching up, man. Thanks so much. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, thanks, Grant. Have a good show.
You got it. Bobby Blanco. Check him out, massinsports.com. To the gridiron. Mitch Tischler. I'm sorry I don't have Backstreet's Back for you. I heard B. Mitch and Finley playing that for you earlier today. That is a banger.
It is an absolute banger. Somehow boy bands became my thing over there on that show, and all of a sudden we're being intro'd to Backstreet Boys every week.
And it's a good choice, my friend. It's one of those things where in middle school you had to, like, cover your ears, like, oh, I don't like this. And now you're like, damn, this song is fire. Pretty good. Speaking of fire, a lot of moves for the Commanders. We're up to 18 free agent additions, 16 of them external. How you feeling?
I really like what they've done this offseason. I mean, they basically completely turned over the whole roster and still have the most amount of money against the cap in the NFL. So I think they've made a lot of prudent moves with vets who have experience and can come in and help right away. And have also created a little bit of a nice pocket for who that number two pick is going to be, whether it's Drake May or Jaden Daniels.
Beltway Football's Mitch Tischler. Left tackle still wide open. I mean, right tackle, they've got an answer in Wiley. But he did give up almost 10 sacks last year. What do you make of my theory that I would sign Trent Brown or another one of the best available tackles, then draft a guy at 36 or 40, and if I could, I would start that guy at right tackle and Brown or whoever at left tackle right away and make Wiley kind of a super utility option. Where are you at on that?
I don't hate that idea. I think there's kind of a bunch of different options that they can do. But certainly, with all the trades that they've made, they have enough capital to address left tackle in the draft. It's a super deep draft for tackles, and as many as 8 might go in the first round. And even sitting there at 36, there are some good names that could fall back to them there. So I think it comes down to, you know, at some point you got to trust your talent evaluators, and this whole roster needed to be overchanged, overhauled, and brought in a bunch of new folks. And at some point you're going to have to start some rookies somewhere. And I know, Commanders fans probably have at least 4+ years of PTSD of first round picks not always, working out the way that we expected them to. So at some point you got to trust your talent evaluators, and a guy that you take, you know, mid first round or early in the second round has got to start in the NFL in these days, especially for a team that's retooling the way the Commanders are.
What do you think they'll do it to? What would you do it to?
I think they'll go with Jaden Daniels at 2. I like him a lot more than Drake May. I wouldn't be upset with either guy, but to me, the flaws in Jaden Daniels' games are much more fixable than the flaws in Drake May's. And at the end of the day, as you're adjusting to you know, the NFL life with Jaden Daniels. He always has his legs that he can fall back on. And I think Cliff Kingsbury can design an offense that would work for Jaden in a early on in his time in Washington.
Mitch Tischler, Beltway Football, a good egg. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Grant.
Yeah, man. Good catching up as always. That is your Beltway Blitz. Speaking of the 16 external free agents the Commanders have signed, one of them was safety Jeremy Chinn from the Carolina Panthers. He's going to join me in a little over an hour at 5:30 today right here on The Fan. But next, I was just talking to Mitch about what the Commanders should do at 2. Ron Rivera's become an analyst on ESPN. He's now making the rounds, talking shop about all things NFL draft, Commanders, what have you. He gave his opinion on who they're going to take it to. And while you may not care what Rivera would do, he's actually predicting what he thinks they're going to do. And if you go back, his prediction on what they were going to do in free agency has been pretty much spot on. I want to get into that next, right here on Grant and Danny. Hopefully everybody had an excellent weekend and a strong St. Patrick's Day. You got to enjoy a little corned beef and cabbage, perhaps. I don't do cabbage, but I do corned beef. It was good. All kinds of different types of potatoes. They got that right, the St. Patrick's Day meal. They got that one right. Welcome back to G&D. Danny should be back tomorrow. You're listening to The Fan. Ron Rivera is now an analyst. He's making the rounds. And I got to be honest with you. I imagine, I'm trying to be cognizant and respectful of what you guys want to hear and what you care about, what you don't. And so I can't imagine you'll want us talking shop on all of Rivera's takes all the time. Because we've got a pretty good sample that says he's not exactly batting over 500 with his assessments on players, draft, free agency, or otherwise. But if you go back to what he said Washington was going to do in free agency, man, did he nail it. It's almost like he's been meeting with these owners for months. It's almost like he's got a pretty good idea of the philosophy that they were hoping the next wave of the organization used and the paradigm that was implemented.
Yep, very limited.
Now, he did not know who their general manager was going to be. He did not have any time working with Adam Peters. He doesn't really know how he views things and what his ideas are. He didn't help hire Lance Newmark, the assistant general manager. But he knows what their draft board looks like based on the day he walked out the door. He's been meeting with scouts every step of the way. He's been talking about the quarterback class with the guy that runs the amateur side, Tim Gribble, and all of the folks that report to him. And he knows about the pro personnel side because most of those guys, interestingly enough, are still there. Marty, the other Marty. Marty, that's four.
You missed Marty.
Okay, more Marty. Thank you. It's hard sometimes to keep track of all the Martys. Come on, it's fun. We're just funning. Everybody's having a gut. But I would have said, I don't really care what Rivera has to say about Washington, except that he did this little sit-down call, whatever it was, with John Keim at the end of the season. And it was just kind of a, here's why things weren't as bad as you thought, or here's what I didn't do well enough, or we'll do differently. I still want to work kind of story. And he suggested they're going to go in a completely different direction. We tried to build things from the outside in. I'm paraphrasing. He was talking about receivers. And I guess he's suggesting corner because they drafted a couple of them early last year, although that didn't go great. But he said they're going to go inside out. They're going to try to fix the O-line. They're going to sign up the middle. And he couldn't have been more spot on. They spent on Luvu, inside linebacker. They spent on Wagner, more inside linebacker. Kicked Luvu outside, essentially. The strength of the team is still the D-tackles. We were saying, might they trade Allen? Could they trade Payne? And he's going, no, 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 no. They're building the whole defense around those two guys. The ownership group we know didn't want to pay either of the defensive ends. That's why Chase Young went to San Fran and Montez Sweat went to Chicago and is still there on a massive new contract. But my point in bringing this up is just to tell you that Rivera, when he spoke about what they were going to do, suggested it's going to be a bunch of free agents. They're going to really have a changing of the guard, and they're going to do it this way. And he kind of nailed it, if we're being honest. They went and signed a center hours into free agency. They got a guard pretty quickly, inside out. And so I go, huh. Again, it's almost like he has talked to this ownership group and had a feel with people in the building for what was going to happen.
Yep. Very limited.
But I thought, I wonder what he would say then if asked, what are they going to do at number two? Have him and Josh Harris ever talked about those players, about quarterback at two, about what he's looking for in a QB? Has he talked to anyone high ranking that's still there? Obviously, his guys. But he didn't talk to Peters. He didn't talk to Newmark. So does it even matter what he thinks they think? He was on the radio, as a matter of fact, on an Odyssey station, BetQL. And this is what he had to say when he joined BetQL and they asked him what Washington's going to do with the number two overall pick.
No, I think they go with Jalen Daniels. Again, this is about who's going to fit that style of offense that Cliff Kingsbury's bringing to town. That's why they went out and signed Marcus Mariota, and I think that's what you're going to get. I really do. I think that's the kind of offense player they're looking for, and I think he's dynamic enough.
Now, he's not going to come out and say, well, I know that this is the type of guy that ownership thinks is going to be what works in the league moving forward. And to be honest, let's say he's had conversations with Harris throughout last season. I just wonder how much ownership would even have divulged about their future plan or their vision and wants to a guy that they had to have known the day they took over was not going to be here beyond this past season. Remember, we don't know that it was Harris, but there was a point in time where one of the prospective buyers was meeting with Sean Payton last offseason. Well, there's only a couple of prospective owners that were ever close enough to really start trying to put their ducks in a row. I got to assume it might have been the group that landed this team, but let's say hypothetically it wasn't. Somebody was talking to Sean Payton. When you are the head coach of a team that isn't winning and a new ownership comes in, it's a matter of time. You're a dead man walking. And Rivera knew that last year. I think most of us knew that every step of the way. You have a chance to force them to keep you by winning, and that just didn't come to fruition. So if you know he's probably not going to be there, I don't know that you're sitting down going, I really like this Jaden Daniels guy. Tell me what you see when you watch film. I wouldn't give much credence to this if he didn't nail free agency. And maybe he just kind of got lucky. But how did he know they were having a paradigm shift? How did he know that, you know, our philosophy was this and now it's going to be the opposite? We did it this way, that we zigged, they want to zag. I think some of this came by way of the trade deadline. When he found out, like, we drafted a first-round defensive end, Montez Sweat. He didn't, but we, meaning the organization from his perspective. No, we drafted Chase Young. We have prioritized the defensive line and ends and pass rush. And these guys, meaning ownership, they didn't want to pay Chase Young. They didn't want to pay Montez Sweat. Now, I'm not sure that is their big picture philosophy. I would guess if one of those guys was TJ Watt, they would have paid him. You know, if you've got Myles Garrett, you might be willing to fork over close to $30 million a year, like the Giants just did for Brian Burns. Sweat didn't have double-digit sacks until last season, and Young just hasn't really shown it. I'm sure they were getting a lot of mixed reviews as they were interviewing and talking to people around campus last season about how much of a priority to make him going into the future. But when Ron Rivera says, this is not who he would draft. He was not asked, hey, coach, who would you draft at number two? Although I definitely think he would draft Jaden Daniels too. I believe that. And by two, I mean also. At number two, he's taking him. He had so much success with Cam doing it that way, with a guy that can make plays with his feet. I think he's probably always chasing something like that. So I do believe if the Martys and Rivera were still running the show, it'd be Daniels. I'd be very confident in that. Because we just don't know how Peters thinks or what Newmark thinks. To me, I have no clue. I'm going on different shows. People are asking me, what are the Commanders going to do? And I just have to say, I have absolutely no idea. They're not really letting a whole lot out at this point. But it'll be Daniels or May. They're going to like one of those two better than the other. Can't tell you which one. We can try to look into their proclivities or what they've had. I mean, Peters was never his own GM, never really making his own decisions, forming his own roster. But he was a part of a team that got to a Super Bowl with a seventh-round pick who is not a runner, you know, more of a kind of a game-managing athlete in Brock Purdy. He's never really been in an organization where they had an electric dual threat, if you think about Peters' past. In Denver, he won his ring with Peyton Manning. In New England, he was there during the Tom Brady era. So maybe you think he leans Drake May, if you really think that he's going to base this decision on what's worked in his career. But I don't think that's a fair assessment. He may look around the league constantly as a talent evaluator and go, man, one day I want to be running a team where I got a Lamar Jackson type QB who's the best athlete on the field every single Sunday. And frankly, everyone should probably view it that way. Like, if you know that Jaden Daniels is going to turn into Lamar, of course you would just take him and not think twice about it. You got Lance Newmark coming over from Detroit, where they just made the NFC Championship game with Jared Goff. Now, Goff has played very well in Ben Johnson's offense the last couple of years, but there's nobody less athletic or mobile, really, than Jared Goff. You know where he's going to be at all times. He's standing in the pocket, and he's making throws. And when he's rolling, he'll dissect you, he'll carve you up, he'll make every throw. But that's the assistant GM, who's the top lieutenant to Adam Peters. Detroit, going back through the years, trying to rack my brain. I mean, it was Stafford pretty much forever under Newmark. Again, more May-ish, I would say, like a athlete in the pocket. But I don't know if I should say that. I mean, Daniels is also very, very capable and apt as a passer. He just, the one knock I have on him throwing the football is he almost never throws to the middle of the field. But he can sling it. Like, the guy's way better thrower of the football than people give him credit for. Something about when you run for 100-plus yards in a game or 10 touchdowns in a season, or you just have the speed that he does where you don't get the credit you probably deserve throwing the football. Although I'd say the same about May scrambling around with 40-plus first downs, converting on third and fourth down as a scrambler the last 2 years. Way, way, way better athlete, more mobile than people think. But this was Ron Rivera, again, when asked, what are the Commanders going to do at number two overall?
No, I think they go with Jalen Daniels. Again, this is about who's going to fit that style of offense that Cliff Kingsbury's bringing to town. That's why they went out and signed Marcus Mariota. And I think that's what you're going to get. I really do. I think that's the kind of offense player they're looking for. And I think he's dynamic enough.
He thinks Kingsbury wants a quarterback who can run. I think a lot of people have assumed that because they took Murray 1-1. But did that experience for Kingsbury make him more or less inclined to do it again? I think that's a fair question. He also believes that going and getting Mariota is a tell, which is something we've debated in town. They went and got Marcus Mariota. Does that mean they're more inclined to have a starter that's like him, where they're designing runs, they're going read option, big part of the offense. You know, there's design keepers and nakeds, a little bit more like the 2012 Washington offense with Griffin. That's Jaden Daniels, less Drake May. Not to say you can't do some of that with Drake May, but it's going to be a much bigger part of the rookie offense, I would imagine, for Daniels out of LSU. Again, I would have preferred to have been in a place where I heard this and I went, well, Rivera doesn't know any more about their plans than the rest of us. I just don't think that's true. He knows the ownership group, and you could say, well, the owner shouldn't be making the pick. Owners are always going to be involved, ideally limitedly, but when it comes to head coaches, GMs, and quarterbacks, three categories, they will be sitting at the table. It's not a coincidence that Adam Peters was there for all those meetings at the combine. Not a problem unless he's picking the quarterback and telling them what to do, But they are going to be involved. They should be involved. Those are the biggest decisions that get made in a $6-plus billion entity. They're going to be in the room. Is it possible that he's got some inclination? We do know. What you cannot argue with me on is that Ron Rivera knows what the current scouts who are all still in place were saying all year about those quarterbacks. It's not like, as he knew, they were going QB. They were never having updated meetings. They were never filing reports that he could read on Daniels, on May, on what they were thinking. You know, their scout in the Southeast, or their area checker, or their national scout, or their Tim Gribble who puts together the draft board. Of course, he had some intel on how they were leaning as a staff. So my question to you guys is, do you buy that Rivera knows more than the average person when he predicts they're going Jaden Daniels? Yes or no? Because he certainly doesn't know what Peters thinks, what Newmark thinks. They're probably the most important people in the decision. 800-636-1067 is the number. Really want to hear what you guys think about this. 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny.
No, I think they go with Jalen Daniels. Again, this is about who's going to fit that style of offense that Cliff Kingsbury's bringing to town. That's why they went out and signed Marcus Mariota, and I think that's what you're going to get. I really do. I think that's the kind of offense player they're looking for, and I think he's dynamic enough.
Ron Rivera, BetQL Network, Odyssey. He was a guest breaking down free agency. They asked him who the Commanders are going to take at number two. And I get that most of you probably don't have much interest in what Rivera thinks. If they said, who should they take? I wouldn't play the cut or ask you about it. If they said, who do you think's better? If they said, who would you take? I get it. We just learned for 4 years. He might not be that great at telling you who they should take. But he's not doing that. He's telling you who he thinks they're going to take. He was in the building with all the scouts that are putting their board together. Does that mean any more than any other analyst? I absolutely think it does. I would point to free agency, where he said, yeah, they're going to spend a lot of money to build from the inside out, where they went out and got two inside linebackers. He said they're going to shift philosophy from what I was doing. They're going to do it a different way now. They have. He was right about that. He's one for one. Now he's being asked about quarterback, and he's saying Daniels over May. I have to assume he knows what the scouts internally thought. Now, I'm not going as far as saying I think they're taking Daniels, because Peters could come in and say, that's cute that you guys really like Daniels, I like May. But I believe that they were headed in that direction when he got fired, and I think him suggesting that they're going to go Daniels reflects that. It's not just him answering as any other former coach or GM from another market would. Where are you at on this? 800-636-1067. Joe is in Fairfax on G&D without Danny today. What's up, Joe?
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I don't think he knows. He knows a little bit. I don't think his opinion on Jane Daniels is because he's got insider knowledge. I think if you put that, they hired Mariota. Mariota's game mirrors more closely Jane Daniels than a Drake May or a J.J. McCarthy or any of the others. I think that's where Rivera's coming from.
So, but do you agree with me that he does have insider knowledge, or do you disagree with that?
I do agree with you. Yes, he was in the building. There's got to have been conversations in the last 4 years where he kind of gets a sense of what the different people who were working with him like to see.
Right. I mean, Mayhew's still there. Herney, who's his right hand man, is still there. Hell, even if he doesn't have those conversations all of last year, he can just text Mayhew or Herney and be like, hey, what are you guys doing it to? Now, if they're smart, they're not necessarily giving away the business. And by the way, I don't even think they've made that decision yet entirely, for what it's worth. But he would know who Mayhew prefers or who Herney prefers. He has a better chance to get that intel from the scouts that have been in and out of his office for 4 years, answering to him, whatever he said to do, they did or they lost their job, than, say, I would or another random person who covers the team would. So I absolutely think there's insider knowledge here. And I think this is more relevant to me in terms of predictive of what they're going to do than people have suggested with, like, who the backup quarterback is. Because I did shoot that down. And I'd be curious to hear what you guys think about that. We haven't really talked about that on the show. I mean, they went and got Marcus Mariota as their QB2. He is more Daniels than he is May. Although, God, I hate that comp. Because, man, is Jaden Daniels way more talented and electric than Marcus Mariota, even coming out, in my opinion. But also, Drake May is so much more mobile. It's not like you can't design runs and do some read options with May. But obviously, if the idea is you're going to build an offense like what you had in Arizona for Cliff Kingsbury's Cardinals with Kyler Murray, where you do go read option, where you do have keepers, where you are going to design, you know, naked quarterback rollouts and a bunch of things like that, that screams Daniels more than it is Drake May. A lot of people, as soon as they went and got Marcus Mariota, leaped to the lily pad that said, well, obviously, getting Mariota is a tell that they like Daniels over May. I disagree. I don't know how you guys feel about that. 800-636-1067. There's a litany of QBs and a long list of guys that are starters that are nothing like their backups. Some teams prefer the change of pace out of the bullpen to go from the knuckleballer to someone who throws 100 or from the flamethrower to a crafty lefty. So all of a sudden you get some better matchups, right, in baseball. In football, it's a little, you're just seeing a different thing. It takes you a little while to adjust rather than if you've planned all week for a guy that's going to be running around and the pocket's going to be moving, and then the backup is the exact same way. But there are teams like the Baltimore Ravens who, no matter what, Lamar Jackson's the starter post-Flacco. It's going to be Robert Griffin. It's going to be Tyler Huntley, who just moved on and stayed in the division now. Huntley go to the Cleveland Browns this weekend? Did I see that? They're loading up at QB. They're three deep now with some. They got Deshaun Watson, Jameis Winston, and him. Three guys who have had success at different points in the National Football League. Yeah, and you still have Dorian Thompson-Robinson is his name, UCLA. Not Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. That's a different guy. That's DRC, not a quarterback. Ravens are probably, I would say, always going to be that team that keeps their offense because it's so predicated on Lamar, able to be run with whoever comes off the bench. Josh Johnson is their backup right now. They brought in Malik Cunningham from the New England Patriots, I think is also on their depth chart. But I did not view the hiring of Mariota to be a backup as really having anything to do with who they're going to draft. I think you're picking from a small pool of veterans. You need someone that you trust to be able to play a little bit when he comes off the bench. There just aren't that many options. They tried to get Sam Darnold before him. They got outpriced by the Vikings. Does that mean that if they brought in Sam Darnold, we'd all be screaming that they definitely want May? I don't correlate the backup to the starter in that way. But I do think Rivera's got some insider knowledge. We'll see what you guys think next on the phones. 800-636-1067 on the MGM National Harbor Listener Lines. 800-636-1067. They're wide open. Jeremy Chin, new safety, joining me at 5:30. Chase Young, meeting with the team today, will tell you who. Also, Austin Eckler took a stab at defining the running back roles between him and Brian Robinson. I want to get into that as well as we continue on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.